Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
It's a question that keeps business leaders up at night. How do you go from thinking about change to actually making it happen?
How do I start? Where do I start? What is the use case? Where's the value?
From the AI revolution.
This is the most amazing time ever. And developments in AI are super, super quickly changing.
To the urgent need for sustainability and resilience.
The physical climate risk predicted in the climate models has arrived.
The way we do business is transforming fast, but we're here to help. I'm Chip Kleinexel, host of Resilient Edge, a new business vitality podcast paid and presented by Deloitte and produced by BBC Storyworks Commercial Productions. It's a guide to implementing and sustaining change at scale. Coming soon, everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Natalie. Hello. Hi, it's David. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Listen, we're on our way. Looking forward to it. Just down the road.
Are you on the Fulham Palace Road?
Yes.
The female is on the nest ledge. As you're walking, you should see her on the ledge.
I'm really excited to talk to you about them.
Uh-huh.
All right, see you in a minute.
Okay, see you soon.
Bye.
The peregrine falcon is the fastest animal on our planet. Capable of reaching speeds of over 240 miles an hour.
Well, I'm so fascinated that they dive bomb things and they can go so fast.
A lot of people, they come here to do the sighting of the falcons in the tower.
Peregrines are just a great way for people to engage with nature because they are so charismatic.
Beyond its remarkable speed and hunting ability, the peregrine is truly the world's bird of prey. Following one of the most successful conservation efforts in human history, it's now more widespread than any other raptor found on every continent except Antarctica.
You find peregrines in Australia, in Africa, in Europe, in America, so they are worldwide, no?
I'm David Lindo, otherwise known as the Urban Birder. As a naturalist and writer, I've spent my career pursuing my obsession for birds. And just like many others over the decades, I've been mesmerized by witnessing the peregrine's unique ability to hunt and thrive in our urban spaces. In fact, the city where I'm from, London, now has the second largest population of peregrine falcons in the world.
What's this flying towards us? This looks like a peregrine with prey.
That's a peregrine with food.
In this documentary from the BBC World Service, I'm going to highlight how, through an impressive ability to adapt to man-made environments and the dedicated efforts of individuals around the world, the peregrine falcon has gone from being a species on the edge of extinction in the middle of the last century to a global success story of conservation. Yes, the peregrine falcon is flying high.
Talk us through this. It's heading right for us. I can't remember last time I saw it.
Spring is on the horizon, and today, of all places, I find myself in a cemetery. What on earth am I doing in a cemetery, I hear you ask? Well, the truth is, it sits right next to Charing Cross Hospital in Fulham, southwest London. And this is a hospital where peregrines have been nesting since 2007.
It's been a long time. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You?
I was thinking on the way up, how long have
the person who knows most about their story is a local called Natalie Mayu, who originally hails from France.
So listen, we're here to see the famous peregrines.
She's actually gone.
Yeah,
well,
she's
we're
flying
not
off
looking.
While we're talking, yeah. What's this flying towards us? This looks like a peregrine with prey.
No, that's a peregrine with food.
Wow, look at that. It's flying overhead. I love seeing peregrines in flight because they have such power. They look so invincible, you know.
Wow, watching them fly is magical. I just don't tire of seeing it. Partially what brings me to watch them every day. When something happens, it's fast. You just have to have your wits with you to observe it, but it's fantastic. It's difficult to to say in words. It's dramatic. It's just, you just want more.
Talk us through this. It's heading right for us. Wow.
The one that we saw before was probably the male, and he was looking for the female. They managed to meet each other on the corner of that building, which is one of their eating spots. Absolutely perfect for peregrines because it's like cliffs. They do feed mostly on pigeons. They do feed as well on parakeets. I actually got a hashtag for it on social media. I use Eat Your Greens, and people absolutely love it. I had a great spotted woodpecker who was coming to my feeders at my window and would actually tap at the window if there was no more food and he wanted me to. And they got him 1 year. He was getting a little bit old, I suspect, and they got him. So I was a little bit sad, but it's peregrines. It's just the way it is. It's the pyramid of life. Yeah, they're the top predator, so you have to expect that.
Yeah. I often say that you don't have to wear green anoraks. People have this stereotypical view of a birdwatcher or birder, which is someone dressed in green wellies, beard, that kind of vibe. And you don't have to be like that at all. And urban birding for me is great because you can wear whatever you want to wear and dip into a coffee shop at any point. You're not committed to being out in the wild the whole time. I'm first generation Jamaican. The fact that I do what I do, I'm the urban birder, I'm a black guy, automatically makes me different and makes people interested. I remember walking through Sherwood Forest, but to go into the depths of the forest and come across a black guy walking with his girlfriend, I actually had to stop and go over to him and say, "How are you doing? How's it going? Have you enjoyed your trip?" It's an unusual sight. I'm looking at a picture of a peregrine falcon right now, and it's a bird that looks as if it's just taken off. You can see its really big eyes, dark eyes, surrounded by yellow. Their eyes are very acute. They can see a mouse a mile away. I think it's about 8 times the power of our eyes. It's got this really sharp, hooked beak. It's got this sort of black moustache that kind of comes down from each eye, and it's got a white chin. Underneath its body is mostly white with some barring, and the back is a sort of a slate blue colour, and then it's got these really amazing yellow feet with sharp, razor-sharp black talons. The female's about the size of a crow, the male the size of a large pigeon. It's a warm, beautiful, clear day in late April. Absolutely perfect weather for some urban birding. 8 years ago, I moved to the city of Cáceres in the Extremadura region of southwestern Spain, an area famous for its diverse bird life. But today, I made my way to the capital, Madrid, specifically to the Museo de América, or Museum of America, in the Moncloa-Arabaja district. But I'm not here for the art or archaeology. It's an oldie-worldy kind of building with lovely cream pillars. Ground colour of the building is pinkish. It's got a really interesting looking tower, quite intricate in its design. And I reckon that could be possibly where the peregrines are nesting.
Hola, rancha.
Mira, mi español es fatal.
Bueno, está muy bien, mejor que el suyo.
Joining me is biologist Arancha Leal of Halcones Urbanos, a group set up to monitor and support the growing peregrine falcon population of this city.
I started studying peregrines about 15 years ago. We started with about 5 pairs of peregrines breeding in Madrid, and now we have at least 16 pairs.
And there is a pair that are nesting on top of that really interesting looking tower.
Yes, and this is one of the first pairs breeding here in Madrid. It was in 2007. In front of the museum is a very big park, Parque del Oeste. It's a very big, good place to hunt because they have a lot of birds.
We're looking at the live webcam on the phone here, smartphone, and we can actually see what's happening now. And the female, it looks like, is incubating the chicks, who can't be more than a few days old. It's fantastic that, you know, we can access these amazing scenes across the world via different webcams looking at peregrine nests. And it's a fantastic gateway for people to sit and watch this whole show. It's almost like a documentary, a soap opera that they can watch live whilst getting on with their own lives.
There is actually a lot of employees in the museum. A lot of staff have the birds in the second screen. My name is Alfonso Hernandez, and I am responsible of press and communication in Museo de America. Last year, it was a pretty dramatic moment, very sad. When I came into the museum, when I came to the office, I noticed that everybody was a little bit sad. And I asked why, and it turned out that actually a chick died that day. So everybody was like, you know, somebody died in the museum, because for us, they are like kind of a family. We see them every day. So everybody was pretty sad, especially security guards, because they were the ones who found the chick, actually. So they were pretty touched. It was amazing because we didn't expect that we wouldn't be so touched. A lot of people that just are like bird lovers, they come here to watch, to take pictures, to do the sighting of the falcons in the tower. And it's something that we usually do not control. They just come by themselves. Everybody loves them.
Yeah, we can see that one of them returning now, calling very loudly, landing.
As you know, we have three.
Yeah, tell us about that, because I heard that there's a juvenile that's still hanging around and actually is helping raise the current family. And sometimes, unfortunately, he gets in the way. Is he part of the same family or
yeah,
year before?
Yeah, he's a chick from the last year. They have two, a female and a male. And this is the male and from last year.
That seems
year.
To be helping out. I mean, I've never heard about that before.
Yes, it's very strange. It's the first time we saw it. And it's not very common in peregrines.
What is this bird doing? I mean, is it helping, actively helping
yes.
feed?
Or? He helps with the incubation, no? And now he's the same. He's very insistent. He comes with prey.
Okay, so there's another
yes,
one coming
another
in.
One.
That could be, looks
yes.
quite brown, that one.
Perhaps a juvenile.
Yeah. In South America, qué lindo, qué lindo. That is the most Spanish thing about me, my name, and that's it. I know it means beautiful, but not in my instance. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I think, especially living in Spain, it makes me slot in a bit better.
With the agriculture, some years ago, there are a lot of pesticides. So it's bad for the peregrines because perhaps the eggs are thinner and get broken.
Broken, yeah, because broken. In the past, in America, there was a problem with DDT poisoning.
Yes.
From the 1940s, DDT became a popular agricultural insecticide used around the world. Yet by the 60s, scientists noticed something amiss. DDT was bioaccumulating in small birds from the insects and plants they consumed. And naturally, it was also entering the systems of their predators. The big problem was DDT was causing the eggshells of birds to thin, meaning that their eggs could accidentally be crushed as they were being incubated. Chicks were being lost before they had a chance to hatch, and DDT, along with other man-made pesticides from this era, meant that by the end of the 60s, the peregrine, Falco peregrinus, was on the verge of extinction. Once the devastation of these substances for bird life was realised, their use was banned in various countries, leading to the recovery of peregrine numbers and ultimately the more recent trend of their widespread success in urban environments. Now, there are an estimated 340,000 peregrines on our planet. We're standing on the Thames footpath and I'm looking at this imposing building which has featured in my memories of London all my life. Battersea Power Station. Located on the south bank of the River Thames, this is one of the largest brick buildings in the world, famous for its unique Art Deco design and four notable white chimneys that you can see from many viewpoints across the capital. This station was first built in the 1930s, but by the early 80s, as the idea of using coal to generate electricity became archaic, it shut down. The absence of humans plus a very tall structure created a perfect environment for peregrine falcons to thrive.
How are they here? Are they pets? No, they're not pets. They are wild birds and they live here. Hello, my name's Sarah Bannum and I am Head of Community and Sustainability at Battersea Power Station. Let me introduce you to David Morrison, who is our resident expert on all things peregrine falcon.
Dave.
Hello.
You know what we're here to see today, don't you?
Yes, one of them sitting over there on the tower. She might... Oh, we've got another one there. If you look up there now, in the she's just come out of the nest tray.
So the very first time you saw a peregrine here in Battersea, Talk us through what went through your heart and your mind.
I'm doing the wrong job. That was basically it. I was in construction and it was art graft. And I was a younger man in 43, something like that. When I first came here, I was working next door. I was a steel fixer. Looked over here and there was a couple of peregrines flying around chimneys, and basically it all started from there for me, you know, and I got hooked. And as they've colonised London, they've sort of dragged me with them as a consultant, and I'm now monitoring about 16 pairs. I'm a lucky man. I mean, when I first started, that was in early 2000, there was possibly three pairs in London that we knew of, 1998 being the first breeding pair. And to now, to 2024, we've got at least 51 pairs in London. They've just gone from strength to strength. Territories were around about 2.5 mile radius. Now, I mean, it's around about half a mile. I mean,
that's really incredible because, you know, as a kid, and I'm sure when you were younger, to see a peregrine was like a major thing. I remember my first peregrine, I think it was in Essex or something during the winter, and I was like bowled over.
Same here.
Yeah, probably the same
down
place.
Down the cone.
Yeah. So it was a massive privilege to see it, and it's incredible that their territories are shrinking so much now.
It is. That was a rare bird back then.
Yeah. I'm looking at the watchtowers. When I come down from the watchtower to the main part of the building, there is a ledge, and standing on the ledge is a fine peregrine. Is that the male or the female?
That's the female. The male is sitting across the river at the moment. When she turned up, she was an adult. So she's calling now. You can hear her. Okay. We know, looking at her, she's probably... Yeah, she's got a fullish crop, so she's already fed.
So in 2014, it was decided to redevelop the power station itself with shops and homes and offices, and that was finally opened in October 2022. We needed David's expertise in how to get the peregrines to leave the power station so we could construct it. Not only was it trying to net off and close up holes and ledges, but we even put mannequins on the roof in high-vis jackets so that the wind would blow the jackets to scare the peregrines off.
Did that work?
Ish.
They're clever, aren't they?
They are very clever. It kept them out of the places they shouldn't go, which, you know, would have been very awkward. They can adjust and they're tenacious. If you can imagine, this has been an 8-year construction site, and while all that was going on, all the cranes, all the work, the noise, they just carried on. They just took everything in their stride.
We knew we had to provide a home for the peregrines, a penthouse for the peregrines in a Grade 2 star listed building overlooking the river. We had to brief the architects, so it's an architect design penthouse overlooking the river. It's got a special substrate in there. It cost about £45,000 to do this.
That's one expensive nest. I don't know of any nest in the world that costs that much. I mean, do these peregrines realise how lucky they are?
I think they're very, very fortunate. And I know David thinks they're far more important than the power station itself.
As a species, they're so adaptable and resilient. They're quite incredible, you know, and it's worked very well. And I mean, they accepted it straight away. They've got a concave edge and it's nice and comfortable and they absolutely love it. They're on there all the time.
Designing this properly, we've ensured sustainability and that our VIBs, our very important birds, will always have a home at Battersea Power Station.
So whilst chatting with Dave, I noticed there's a few people kind of standing around, milling around. There's a guy actually with a pair of binoculars. Hello.
Hello.
What brings you here? You've got a pair of binoculars on. Am I guessing right? You're looking at peregrines or?
No, we had tickets to visit the attraction here at the Battersea Power Station. But I tend to take these anywhere because I'm a keen birder.
You are a true urban bird, if you ask me.
Well, I like to get out in the country a lot.
Okay, so here in Battersea, you've obviously noticed the peregrines. What do you think of these birds being here?
I think it's wonderful that they've managed to come back from the near disaster of the 60s and pesticide poisoning. And now they seem to be in most cathedrals around the country. And it's just marvellous that they've got a ready food supply with the good old pigeons. Apparently they've been here for so long and the work virtually destroying the place to rebuild it didn't drive them away. It's a real bonus for someone who's just come up to see this now iconic old industrial building reborn and to find, lo and behold, that there's this fantastic wild bird nesting here and it's in plain sight to anyone who's got the time and the inclination to spot them. It's fantastic.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
It's a question that keeps business leaders up at night. How do you go from thinking about change to actually making it happen?
How do I start? Where do I start? What is the use case? Where is the value?
From the AI revolution...
This is the most amazing time ever, and developments in AI are super, super quickly changing.
To the urgent need for sustainability and resilience.
The physical climate risk predicted in the climate models has arrived.
The way we do business is transforming fast, but we're here to help. I'm Chip Kleinexel, host of Resilient Edge, a new business vitality podcast paid and presented by Deloitte and produced by BBC Storyworks Commercial Productions. It's a guide to implementing and sustaining change at scale. Coming soon, everywhere you listen to podcasts.
I'm David Lindo, and you're listening to Flying High from the BBC World Service. Guess where I am? I've made my way across the Atlantic to the Bluegrass State. I'm in Kentucky, in southeastern United States, a land famous for its fried chicken, music, bourbon, and of course the horse races. But as you probably guessed, it's another animal that I'm here to meet today. It's our speedy raptor, the peregrine falcon. The story of the peregrine in Kentucky is reflective of many other parts of this huge country. It had sadly become completely extinct here. But thanks to the dedicated efforts of conservationists, the falcon is now making a remarkable comeback. And once again, this story is connected to a power station. What is it about peregrines and power stations? I'm off to find out. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in Louisville. I've just been staying in a house that resembles Little House on the Prairie. It's out in the middle of nowhere, actually on the edge of town. The urban birding here is great, so I'm gonna have a quick cheeky look before going out on my quest. I set off for Mill Creek Generating Station, just south of the city, to meet avian biologists Michael Patton and Kate Slankard of the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources.
The bird was put on the endangered species list in the U.S. in 1970, and DDT was outlawed in 1972, and so that was the first two good things to happen for peregrines. The entire eastern United States suffered.
To the point where they were, you know, extinct in the eastern United States.
When was this?
Like I said, our last nesting pair in Kentucky was the late 1930s, and there were a few wild peregrine pairs out west still.
We started hacking the birds in 1993. That's releasing young birds into the wild. In 1996, we got our first nesting pair right here in Louisville. One pair in 1996 to 19 nowadays. They've come a long way in the last 25, 30 years. This is one of many nesting pairs we keep an eye on. Nesting for us since 2007, which was the year I started, so it holds a little bit of a special, you know, meaning for me to come back here and talk to you about them.
So what is it about this particular plant that they find attractive?
Two things. High structures and a lot of pigeons. And so really good prey base for them to hunt.
It's going to be very noisy, so all of us will have to wear our headphones, and we're going to go look at these peregrines now. So we're on top of the roof now, and then in front of me is a massive, almost like a lighthouse, if you can imagine, with small windows. And on one of them is the peregrine box. Is that the male or female, Michael?
It looks like the male right now. So it's the male he's flying over. He's probably just checking us out. The female's getting ready to lay eggs, so she's a little bit more lethargic right now.
So it's quite a crowd of us standing here now admiring the peregrines. But one thing I have noticed is that the pigeons are still flying around. You'd imagine with such an apex predator in their midst, they wouldn't be anywhere near here, but they're flying around. Why is that, Kate? Are they not worried?
Well, you know, pigeons are not the smartest birds, and there are so many here that the peregrines help knock them back, but they don't deplete their food source completely.
So speaking to the pigeons' intelligence, we've actually had them nest directly on top of the falcon box, lay eggs, and not a care in the world, just hoped it worked out for them, I suppose. But, you know, not the brightest birds.
Most commonly, we'll see nests with three or four young. We've had a few with five, and that's been really exciting. The young often survive to fledging and fledge at 42 days old. Survival in the first year can be low. The actual process of fledging is risky, learning to fly off such a high location. Sometimes we're helping birds out during that process. Probably 60 to 75% of the birds survive their first year, but survival goes up a lot after that. If they make it to adulthood, they may live a long life as long as 18 years.
Males tend to be a bit more subdued, if you will, and the females are they can be more aggressive, may put a lot of energy into those eggs and those chicks, so they tend to be a lot more protective.
Cody, this is David.
At each site, there's always one or two folks. Over time, they've sort of fallen in love with the birds and maybe just gotten them into nature in a way that they've never been into before. Peregrines are just a great way for people to engage with nature because they are so charismatic.
Can you just tell me who you are, please, and what you do?
Okay, my name is Daniel Lowry, and I work with Elgini and KU as a company spokesperson. Well, we're glad you're here. I mean, obviously, we are very proud of the Falcons and the program we've got here. We've had this partnership here with this webcam since 2015. So it's gotten thousands and thousands of views. You know, people here in Kentucky.
So it's a real local story.
It is local, but this is part of the global sort of success.
And what do the Falcons do for LG&E?
What do they do for us? Really, they don't do much for us. We try to do something for them, and we try to give them a place that they can thrive. I think it makes me proud to be part of the company, and I know it makes, you know, other folks who work here day to day, they're proud of it. And it's also cool that here we have them doing so well in sort of an urban setting.
Yeah, it's a little bit Wisconsin.
So who gets to name the chicks?
Who gets to name the chicks? It's to be decided. Maybe if we have a boy, we could name it David, do you think?
Well, David after me?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Why
nice.
Not? I think that would be cool, right?
Okay, well, maybe Cody can speak on this.
So last year, I want to say we banded on May 4th. So we had that May the 4th be with you theme for Star Wars. So the last two males are actually named Boba and Fett for Boba Fett to go along with that Star Wars theme. In the past, we have done retirees would pick a name. I think one year we actually did a contest of picking a name.
Folks voted from our company for names, yeah. But it's fun.
Jake, can you introduce yourself and tell me what you do?
Hi, I'm Jake Walsh. I'm a mechanical engineering co-op here at LG&E at the Mill Creek Station. I've been loving it here, and ever since I found out there was a falcon cam, I've been kind of hooked on it. It's gotten me in trouble a few times, but I love watching the falcons do their things.
Why are you hooked on peregrines?
They just seem super cool. I'm so fascinated that they dive bomb things and that they can go so fast. I'm interested in physics. I'm an engineer. So it's very nice to see that an animal has taken that approach and kind of exploiting laws in physics to do its hunting.
You normally know when a peregrine's coming before you see them because everything else scatters. You suddenly realize, oh, there must be a bird of prey nearby. And then all of a sudden you see this magnificent form just powering its way through the sky. It may not even be hunting, it just be flying through. But to watch one stoop is stupendous. I mean, it is the fastest animal on the planet. And when that bird hits a pigeon full whack, it can sometimes decapitate the pigeon immediately. So the pigeon doesn't even know what's happened. It's gone, you know, it's all over. But I remember being on top of a building called Tower 42 in the financial district of London, and it stands at 600 feet. I was watching a peregrine, and it was soaring quite high in sort of ever-increasing circles upwards, and all of a sudden it just closed its wings and just shot down like a bullet. And it just, the speed from this casual sort of drifting in circles to suddenly this, it's like this rocket propelled. I didn't even see the prey, I was just watching it, and then all of a sudden it just hit this pigeon right in front of us. I mean, we saw it uninterrupted hit this pigeon, and then it just flew off with no effort at all and landed actually on top of the structure of Tower Bridge to eat its prey. And I was watching it through my binoculars, and it was amazing to see that whole thing, because it's not often you get to see predators taking out prey, and it just made you realize, wow, this bird is so majestic. And also, if I ever have a choice, if I come back, I will not come back as a pigeon.
Classic pigeon sound. Okay, so we have peregrines at Charing Cross Hospital, Battersea Power Station, Houses of Parliament, Tate Modern, Ealing Hospital, Kingston University, actually London University on Edgware Road, Morden Civic Centre. Latest survey from the British Trust of Ornithology was showing they were actually increasing in cities and decreasing in the general countryside.
London probably has the biggest population of urban peregrines outside of New York City. How many pairs are there in London, do you know?
That's something I've heard as well. We know that there are at least 50 pairs nesting in London. 50.
Wow.
Nesting within the M25. It's also nice to see the movements inside the UK. So we know, for example, that one of the youngsters from this side is breeding in Nottingham. Get here, maybe we can have it.
So you're going to get your camera out and we're going to look at that bird in much finer detail. This is something that anyone can do if they have peregrines in their neighbourhood. They can just come out, get a tripod, put a little digital camera on top of it and zoom in, yeah?
Yep. You can actually see that her chest is a little bit spotted. But the other thing you can see is how full it is.
Her crop is full. She just
fed. Yeah, her crop is full. And if you remember, we saw the male bring her food.
Yes.
So she probably has enough food to last her until the morning.
So this is the safest time for a pigeon?
Yeah. When I say they are constantly observing the peregrines, that's one of the things that they will observe. Though, on occasion, they are opportunistic. If a pigeon is going to fly right underneath her, she might just go for it.
You know what I saw the other day? I saw this amazing footage from one of those webcams when a wood pigeon landed on a ledge and the peregrine female was actually incubating or sitting there, and she looked shocked as this pigeon just calmly walked past her into the nest area, and all of a sudden her instincts kicked in and she just went for it and ripped it apart.
Yeah, I know the footage you're referring to, and that was actually in France. That was the home of one of the peregrines that's now living only a few miles away from here.
So we're standing here, you know, we're having a chat, and I've just turned around and noticed we've got a whole posse of around about 50 feral pigeons all around us. I'm wondering whether they are sort of hanging out with us, knowing that they will never be attacked here, or the fact that, are you feeding them?
Yes.
I thought so.
Yes, they will follow me in the cemetery when they spot me. But that's also the safest place for them, being on the ground.
And what's it like when you get children coming up to you and looking at your camera? What do they say to you?
Oh, I absolutely love it. You get all sorts of reactions. Very often, and especially if it's young boys, they say, oh, peregrine's in my favourite bird. And they probably have never seen a peregrine in their life before. If they're lucky, we see them flying and they're absolutely ecstatic. You know what? You know the crane over there?
Yeah.
The peregrine is there, and I think, yep, they're going to mate.
Okay, we've got some live action here. So
yep, she's getting ready. Yes, they're mating.
The male's on top of the female?
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Yep, they're mating, actually, yeah. I'm intruding in their privacy by taking pictures of it. And that was a quick one. The male's now flown off.
It's always a quick one. It never lasts more than about 5 or 6 seconds. But that's my third mating of the afternoon. Yes! Fantastic.
Showing you a picture back of my camera here of the male on top of the female, wings aloft, wild abandon as he makes the female very briefly and then moves off. So I just managed to catch it.
Brilliant.
So these peregrines mean a lot to you. I mean, they begin to mean a lot to me now, sitting here. You come every day, yeah?
Yes.
How many hours you spend here every day?
Between 1 and 2.
Okay. Well, that's quite a portion of your life every week. What do your friends and family think of that? Do they think you're absolutely, totally mad?
Some of them do, but one friend is mad enough that she actually joins me most of the time. My partner left me because he said I was spending too much time with the peregrines.
So you're saying that your partner left you because of your obsession with peregrines?
Yes.
I know the feeling.
Oh, commiserations. Yeah, he basically thought, oh, he was not the number one in our relationship anymore. And that was that.
So be it. You spend so much time here. Surely, as well as you know them, they must know you really well.
I often wonder the same thing, yes. I'm sure they do.
I mean, they've got excellent eyesight. They probably notice what you're wearing and, you know,
yeah.
See your binoculars and things like that.
Yeah, that's one thing that I had been told many years ago, that if you sit in the same spot wearing the same thing day in, day out, they will probably recognise you.
What is the situation with peregrines in the rest of Spain? Do you think the rest of Spain is increasing, or is it just in urban areas?
In the urban areas are increasing, and they are worldwide, no? You find peregrines in Australia, in Africa, in Europe, in America. So we destroy their nest sites or the sites in the nature, but they come to the cities.
Right. And yes. I can hear the bird calling now. Yes. I love that call. Yes. It's a call of the wild, even though we're in the middle,
yes, in the middle
of Madrid.
When you walk in Madrid, in the Retiro Park here, it's very easy that a peregrine is passing by.
It's funny because 2 weekends ago, I was here with my family on an open-top bus.
Yes.
But I was looking up and I saw a peregrine as well.
Yes, because where is the Bernabeu football team, we have a peregrine from there. So it's easy to see the peregrines there.
Just to let everyone know, the Bernabeu is the home ground of that great football team called Real Madrid.
Yes.
I'm sure many people have heard of that team, and that's where they are.
Yes, we have a nest in a building very near the Bernabeu, and we have a webcam there. And one night it was a concert of Bruce Springsteen. And you can watch through the camera, you can hear the songs, and you can see the chicks looking. And
the chicks were dancing, were they?
Yes, like that. And in the football, you hear the goal, and the chicks like, oh. It was very funny, that.
When I reflect on the global recovery of the peregrine falcon, it makes me feel as if there is some kind of hope. having almost been wiped out on a wing and a prayer, they're back, amongst us in our most crowded cities. And this time, they're hopefully here to stay.
I've been in my job a long time now, and honestly, this project is one of the ones I'm most proud of. I've gotten to see this species more than double in my time here.
Excitement for the future and getting to be with these birds more and hopefully make an impact in their population and increase the spread of the birds throughout Kentucky and hopefully other states as well in the United States.
I guess birds coming back to the city is just nature taking the earth back from us, you know? We've been spreading everywhere and it's not healthy for the world, and nature has to come back somewhere and somehow. And, you know, I'm glad they do because, you know, we have them here.
Now the peregrines in Madrid are my peregrines.
Okay.
It's like my children, they will be increased. I have been 15 years, but as I am getting old... there will be more other people that get involved and continue with the monitoring, no?
I feel very, very good that I've been able to help in a tiny little way. I've managed to make a lot more people aware of the peregrines around the area. You see the number of webcams that are popping up. Most cities now have at least one peregrine nesting in
a prominent building.
Yeah. So, for example, where I come from in the city of Bayeux now has peregrines nesting on the cathedral there. So,
I think we kind of have a duty to take care of not only the environment, but the other occupants of the environment that we also inhabit. It was human actions that caused that decline. And it's kind of our duty to go about and try to make sure that we can correct those actions.
I'm David Lindo. Flying High was produced by Neil Canwell and was a C60 media production for the BBC World Service. Wherever you are in the world, remember to look up. And you never know, you just might catch the fastest animal on our planet, flying high.
I'm Sumiso Maskander from the Global Story Podcast, where we're looking at the U.S. presidential debate, which much of the world was watching. Kamala Harris went up against Donald Trump in Philadelphia in the first face-off between the two ahead of November's election. What were the key takeaways? The Global Story brings you unique perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.